Welcome back to the program. Just as we talk about the unique history of our nation, every nation comes with its own tumultuous history, yet some inherently produce heroes whose very acts transcend the nation and stand as models for the world. Such is the case with South Africa, a nation whose troubled history and rebirth stands as a beacon of hope for people struggling with repression, prejudice, and even genocide. We're going to talk about this unique history of South Africa today with a guest that has been with us before. It is a pleasure to have him back. He is Dominic LaPierre. He's, of course, a world-renowned historian. He's the international best-selling author of Is Paris Burning, The City of Joy, and O Jerusalem. It is my pleasure to have Dominic LaPierre with us today to talk about his new work, A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. Dominic LaPierre, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
What was it that first caught your attention about South Africa and doing this story?
Well, you know, I've been very involved, Jeff, in India for many years, writing books like you said, The City of Joy, like Freedom at Midnight, which is the history of the independence of India. So and during all those research, I got very good friend with Mother Teresa. I followed her message and I opened a whole humanitarian action in India with the royalties of my book. And you know, one day somebody told me, Dominic, do you want to meet a South African Mother Teresa? This was really intriguing. So I flew to Cape Town and I met in that beautiful city of Cape Town a white woman, the wife of a famous local lawyer, who during the racist regime, which was called apartheid, had saved, risking her personal life so many times, thousands and thousands of black children. Now, to have done that, and what this really represents, you have to appreciate in what context she was living at the time. Apartheid, I mean, short of the gas chamber, was probably the worst racist regime that has ever existed in history. Those 4 million white people who had taken power in 1948 had decided that if they wanted to survive to the 22 million black people who were surrounding them, they had to create a system which really would put those blacks apart from them. And they had created, invented more than 1,725 laws and dispositions which made them a people apart. And the conditions that they imposed to the black population was, you know, hair-raising. You cannot imagine. I mean, they had such an imagination. For instance, you know, in some cases, people said that this person who's known as a white person in a school or somewhere might be a black person. And to determine if she was or not, there was a racial commission who came to this school or wherever this person was living, and they had invented an horrendous test called the pencil test. You know, they would put a pencil in the hair of the person who was suspected to have some black blood. If the pencil would fall from the head immediately, that meant that this person was indeed white. But if for some reason the pencil would stay in the head, that means that some curl there in the hair had retained the pencil and that this person had black blood. But you know, Jeff, that millions of people change color with this only pencil test. Within the same family, two children could be considered as white and two other children as black. Every single black person in South Africa had to have in his pocket a sort of passport. It was called the Interior Pass. On the 40 pages of that passport was inscribed absolutely everything about this person, where she was born, to what tribe she belonged, where she had worked, where she can travel in South Africa. There was even a page on which was written where she could be buried. And if that person did not have this interior pass to show to any police officer, she would go for 1 year in jail. I mean, I, for 3 years, reconstructed this horrible system, and within that horrible system, there were still some heroes. And that's why I think A Rainbow in the Night is such a hopeful book. This woman, Ellen Liberman, going in that slum near Cape Town where she was living in affluence, that slum called Longa, with her little car in the middle of the night. She could have been killed by the white police. She could have been killed also by black extremists. She went in there to rescue a little boy that she had in the hospital where she was working because she was a speech therapist. And she one morning realized that one of the little boys that she was taking care of had disappeared. So she didn't know if he was dead or if he had been discharged and sent home. So she found him in the middle of the night, and she was able to take him in her arm to bring him back to the hospital and put him an IV immediately to save him. And then she opened schools and dispensaries. One day, the white police put a bomb in one of the places where she was addressing the crowd. Fortunately, that bomb exploded only 30 seconds after she had left. So for me, meeting the South African Mother Teresa was fantastic. I said to myself, I'm going to write the story of her life. And little by little, I got interested in the history of South Africa. And that's what became A Rainbow in the Night. It is also the story of Dr. Barnard, the first doctor who did a heart transplant. But you realize that in the middle of this apartheid regime, this white doctor had the guts to transplant a black heart into a white chest. This was incredible to do because on the bottles of blood that could be transfused in a hospital in South Africa at the time, there was a little label which said this blood comes from a black person or from a white person. And even if you were a white person and you had an accident, you could refuse to be transfused blood coming from a black person. And of course, you know, on the way of my research, I met giant like Nelson Mandela. You know, for me, this man is of the same dimension as Mahatma Gandhi, the man who gave independence to India. Do you think that after 27 years in jail, Mandela, instead of calling all the blacks to vengeance against the whites who had tortured them for so long during apartheid, he says, and now all of us, blacks, whites, Indians, colors, we are going to create a rainbow nation. And this is why, you know, the regime of apartheid, after 3 centuries of South African history, didn't end up in a bloodbath because of a man like Mandela.
One of the things that is so remarkable is that we think we understand the history of South Africa, but the degree of apartheid that existed, as you talk about, was far greater than anything that we might imagine might have gone on during the days of slavery or anything else, that it was akin to what was going on in Nazi Germany.
You are absolutely right. And one of the discovery of my research was that in the year 36, 38, before the Second World War, I discovered that a group of 20 South African white students had been invited by Hitler to come and perfect their studies in Nazi Germany. And during their stay in Nazi Germany, they, in a sense, learned all the tricks to be able to impose themselves as a super race, as a super Aryan race. In a sense, the Jews of Hitler were going to be the blacks of the South African apartheid regime. And that's very, really very, very interesting. Took place, you know, just before the war. If you read some of the letters of those people, if you read the story of this young South African white student going to the opening of the Olympics in Berlin in 1938. It's fabulous. He's sitting right across Hitler with a German girlfriend, and suddenly there is this fantastic epic of Jesse Owens beating the speed record. And at this time, Hitler gets up from his seat and leaves the place instead of going down and shaking hand of the winner, because Jesse Owens is black.
The other parallel to what went on in Germany was going back, as you do, and looking at the history of the Dutch coming in to settle in South Africa and believing somehow that they were the chosen people.
Absolutely. The first 100 Dutch people who settled in South Africa, this was in 1652, had been sent by the East India Company trading around the world from Amsterdam, and they were just to plant salads. They were to be gardeners. They were not to colonize South Africa or enter into the continent. They were to provide vitamins for the sailors of those ships going around the world, for the spices race, who were dying of scurvy. But, you know, at some point, after growing their salads, they realized that they belonged to a religion called the Calvinist religion. It's a Protestant offshoot. And Calvin had told them that they belonged to a chosen people, chosen by God to spread the Christian virtues in the world. So for them, suddenly, South Africa, the continent that they had in their back, because they were at the extreme south of South Africa, was like the promised land. And they built bullock carts, and they moved in the continent, and they colonized it little by little. It was three centuries of a somewhat heroic adventure, like conquering the American West, until one day, one of their children, playing with a stone there in one of their farms, knocking that stone with his foot, realized that the stone was not a stone, it was a diamond. South Africa was full of diamonds, and this discovery could not let another great white tribe insensitive, the British. As soon as they found out, they decided to move an army to South Africa and challenge those Dutch, who were called the Boers. And this was to be a ferocious war of 4 years. Really terrible. Hollywood made some films on that war. And finally, in the year of 1940-45, the most extremist of the white people, the white Boers, the white Dutch, after peace had been signed with the British, were able, with elections, to legally take power in South Africa. This happened in 1948. It's yesterday only, you know. And this regime was going to last 60 years until de Klerk, a white man of stature, and Mandela could together decide to hold free elections. And Mandela was the first president of a free South Africa. And do you know that the day of his inauguration, really the whole world, all the chiefs of states of the world had come for this glorious day. That day, Mandela had invited as his personal guest at the first row of the huge assembly hall where the inauguration was to take place, two white men. One was the judge, and the other one was the prosecutor who had sent him in prison for life 30 years before.
What was it in this history that you're talking about that created an environment where 4 million people basically were complicitous in this apartheid?
Well, the fact that they held all the reins of power, and that they realized themselves that if they did not create some kind of regime which would protect them from the 22 million blacks, they would disappear. So they managed, you know, to create this racist system with its 1,725 laws. At the end of my book, A Rainbow in the Night, I publish some of those laws. I mean, you cannot imagine what they are and how much penalty you would get for infringing them. I mean, having a sexual relation with somebody of another race could send you for 10 years in jail. The way that they really chased all those black communities from their townships, their villages, at the extreme borders of the country, saying they are not South Africans, they are members of the Zulus, of the Xhosa, of all those tribes. It's unbelievable. I was able to find the story of a white woman, a wonderful young woman who was in love with a black scientist, and what happened to them during those years is hair-raising. And that's why, you know, the book is really a discovery, A Rainbow in the Night, a discovery of a piece of history which took place yesterday, only yesterday, not very far from ourselves. It's been a huge success in Europe and wherever it was published. And I'm also happy to say that I think that when someone buys A Rainbow in the Night, he also serves a good philanthropic cause, because with the royalties of only one single copy of A Rainbow in the Night, I can feed 10 leopard children for 1 week in my slums of India. And now I have an activity also in Africa and in South Africa. So this book is going to help to erase some of the injustices of our world.
Talk about what would have happened in South Africa if de Klerk and Mandela had not been able to come together the way they did.
I think, Jeff, we would have seen a bloodbath. I mean, the blacks would have avenged themselves for what they had suffered, and the colors and the Indians. It would have been really a civil war probably of the most extreme sort, of the most dangerous sort. This would have been really terrible. But to imagine that this whole thing ended, on the contrary, with the creation of a commission of truth and reconciliation, where the white people who had committed so many crimes could testify in front of a commission about the atrocities that they had committed, but at the same time, they could ask for amnesty. And if you read some of those testimonies, I mean, your hair will raise on your head. It has really been something terrible. And yet, what a lesson to the world that this reconciliation could have taken place. You know, and many times studying this moment in history, traveling throughout South Africa to reconstruct those events, meeting those heroes like Mandela, like Desmond Tutu, like this Helen Liberman, this white woman who saved those black children, the South African Mother Teresa. I said to myself, what a pity that there is not any people of such visions, for instance, in the Middle East.
The Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the idea for that, how did that evolve as a way to move the country forward?
In the sense that those who were the guilty people who had committed the atrocities, instead of receiving the vengeance from the people of the street in a civil war, could tell about their crimes in front of a commission who would, at the end of their testimony, finally grant them an amnesty. So there was no confrontation, really, between those who had suffered and those who had inflicted those sufferings. It's a beautiful example for the whole world in similar cases. Only one white man refused, Jeff, to really speak about his crime in front of that commission. He's a doctor. He's called Wouter Basson. Do you realize that this Wouter Basson, during apartheid, was given by the government of the white extremist people of apartheid the mission to invent toxic substances with which the white could eliminate the black race? And this Wouter Basson invented such substances that would be put in cigarettes, in chocolate, in suds, which were sold on the markets of the black people. It's unbelievable. He refused to testify. There was a huge trial of him after the apartheid was finished. And can you believe it? Two white judges have given amnesty to this doctor. He was acquitted. But today he still lives in Johannesburg there. He's got about 10 bodyguards because his life is in danger. But this man who wanted to eliminate with toxic substances the black race is still alive in South Africa.
The importance of Nelson Mandela in holding the country together. Talk about that.
Yes. This man was such a hero, was such an icon, was such an emblem for so many years. You know, I spent a lot of time in the jail at the extreme south of South Africa where he was locked in for a generation, for 27 years. A sort of Alcatraz. Beautiful place, but he was in that jail in what really was a cage 46466. You know, and I spent so many hours in that cage. I laid myself on the concrete of the floor, looking at the ceiling, trying to imagine what a man locked in that cage could have thought during 10,000 nights. But when Mandela got in that jail for life, until his death, he said to his companions, "We shall make of this penitentiary a university." This man was really driven by a fabulous way to. He knew that one day, somehow, in the bottom of his heart, South Africa would be a free country, and that he himself would perhaps lead this country towards peace and reconciliation. And you cannot imagine, and I think I rebuilt quite well in Rainbow in the Night, the ordeal that this man has suffered for all those years, because the white power has been so mean to him. When they saw that they could not destroy him directly, they tried to destroy him through his wife, Winnie, who was, in a sense, at the beginning, a heroic woman, but she was much younger. She had just married Mandela and had had two children when he was sent to jail. It was very tough for her, but the white power really made her life miserable, and those people, they spread rumors which reached Mandela in his jail, saying that his wife, Winnie, was having affairs all over South Africa, with the idea that they would destroy him that way. The fact that Mandela has survived all that during all these years, that he came out and said, "Now we are going to build a rainbow nation for everybody in our beautiful, beautiful country of South Africa," is fantastic. I have at the beginning of the book one of his saying, which I think is beautiful. Also, the book is dedicated to Ellen Lieberman, this white woman who saved black children during apartheid, and to all those black and whites and colored who, whether African, whether European, who really reconciled the country for peace and and a future, which is, of course, a difficult future because there are a lot of poverty in South Africa. There is today a lot of people are touched with AIDS. So this creates a lot of problems, but it's no longer an interracial confrontation. It's between more rich people and less rich people, or between poor people and more poor people, like those who come from Zimbabwe, for instance, and who try to find a job in South Africa. Of course, the local people in South Africa, they don't like those immigrants. So you read in the paper now and then that there has been confrontation. But it's no longer a confrontation between the white and between the whites and the black. And I think, you know, the day now that America has a black president, I think the story of Mandela, the story of a rainbow in the night, is particularly timely. And, you know, don't forget that this is also the World Cup of football. South Africa is going to be in the news for many months to come.
What impact do you think that that's going to have on South Africa?
Oh, a very big impact, because it's going to give them really a feeling of their nationhood. They're going to do the very, very best, really, to receive all those who are going to come from the whole world with the best hospitality rules. I think, no, it's going to give to their identity a great, great boost.
Dominic LaPierre, the book is A Rainbow in the Night, The Tumultuous Birth of South Africa. Dominic, I thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you.